Hi, this is Mitch Steven, and I'm here with special guest Randy Hughes. They call him Mr. Land Trust. They call him that for a reason. This guy's going to enlighten us on how to use land trust. I was real impressed with his report on 50 reasons to use land trust. Really kind of mind-boggling. But without any further ado, how you doing, Randy?
Good, Mitch. Good. Always good to talk to you. Glad to be on the call and looking forward to clearing up some confusion about foreclosures in different states.
Sure. Well, one of the reasons I want to have you back on is we've got some states that have some really messed up foreclosure laws, and I'm wondering if we can use land trust to alleviate any of that, any of that cumbersome foreclosure process.
Yeah.
So, like in Florida, you know, they have a judicial foreclosure process there. So in the judicial foreclosure process, you know, you have to go up in front of a judge, and basically the judge can say just about anything they want to say. They just start rewriting law right there on the pulpit. So
yeah.
They don't go by any of the laws. They just make it up as they go, whatever they think is right.
Yep, you're right. Well, let's do this for our listeners, Mitch. Let's just talk about the basics to begin with, and that is, what's the difference between a judicial foreclosure and a non-judicial foreclosure? So we're talking about the United States of America, not any foreign countries. And in the United States, some states have non-judicial foreclosure, which means that if someone's going to foreclose on your property, the lender, you know, you borrowed money and used that property as collateral for a loan, and you default on the loan, that lender does not have to go to the court system to foreclose your property. That's a non-judicial foreclosure. Judicial meaning the courts, so non meaning they don't have to go to court to foreclose their interest, which also translates into a much faster foreclosure process. And most of the time in those situations, in those states, when you borrow money, you're going to be signing a deed of trust as the security instrument. But anyway, so that's non-judicial foreclosure. Those states that are judicial foreclosure means that the lender or the seller, in the case that we're talking about, when we're talking about seller financing, must go to court to foreclose her interest and get the property back. So that's the subject that we're talking about, judicial versus non-judicial, and it just depends on what state you're in, and even from state to state, they have different laws for foreclosure. So we can't give you all 50 states foreclosure laws here on this talk, but we can give you some general concepts that I think will be greatly beneficial to you. Now, having said what I just did, this is a issue of foreclosing the purchase of real estate, no matter what, whether it's judicial or non-judicial. We're talking about somebody who buys real estate, defaults, and then what rights do they have in the foreclosure process? What I like to do, and what I always do when I'm selling real estate on an installment contract basis, meaning not for all cash, but I'm the bank, I'm the seller financing guy, is I put each property into its own separate land trust, and then I sell the beneficial interest in the trust to the buyer. Now, the beneficial interest in a land trust is not real estate. It is personal property. Legally, it's personal property. So I drop a contract to buy that beneficial interest. I have an official closing. I do it down at my attorney's office. The buyers have been given copies of everything, especially that contract to purchase the beneficial interest, well in advance for them to review. Then if they have an attorney at closing, their attorney reviews it. If they don't, my attorney reviews the contract with the buyer, going back over the whole contract saying, this is what you're doing. You're buying the beneficial interest in a tribe. Once you pay Randy off in full, then you're going to get the full beneficial interest in this trust. And then you can either take it out of the trust, keep it in the trust, whatever you want to do, but then you're in control, but not until then.
Randy, I heard it put one time. Tell me if you think it's a good picture to paint. I heard a trust is like a paper bag. And in order for a trust to exist, it has to have something inside it. It has to contain something. And so in this case, we're talking about dropping a single-family house or residence into this paper bag. And then you're selling the paper bag. And whatever's in the paper bag, of course, would go with the bag if you sold it. And the paper bag is personal property. It's not real estate, although it contains a house inside of it. So
right.
if you own the paper bag, then you control the house or the assets that are inside the bag. So I've always tried to explain that to the newer people like that, so people kind of have some kind of visual of how this trust works. Might be a little bit elementary, but I know there's a lot of new people out there.
Well, I agree with what you're saying, and that's a good way to explain it. One analogy I always use is that the building that I'm in, for example, I'm sitting in an office building right now. Well, if you take the ceiling tile and the carpet and the tile off the walls and the doors off and everything, it started out as personal property. All the material that went into this office building, or goes into a house for that matter, is sitting out in the lumber yard right now as personal property. It's not until you go out and buy that, some developer does, and he takes it to a job site and he sticks it all together, and then we call it real estate. And so it went from personal property, which is one set of laws, to real estate when it's assembled. Now, we take it one step further and we say, okay, now we're going to take that house or apartment building or office building, whatever, and we're going to put it into a trust, which now converts it back to personal property. So we've come full swing there, and that maybe is another way people can kind of grasp this concept, because it really is somewhat confusing to begin with when you first start studying this, and you think, well, oh my gosh, just because I put this piece of real estate into a trust, now the beneficial interest is personal property? Yes, that is it. And so it's with the personal property laws that we're dealing with when we sell the beneficial interest. We're not dealing with real estate laws. We're dealing with personal property laws. That's the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, dictates what happens with personal property as opposed to the real estate laws, which dictates what's happened with real estate. So if you sell the beneficial interest in a land trust, which is personal property, on an installment contract, and the buyer defaults, depending on what your state laws are, you do have to serve certain notices. And in my state of Illinois, I have to serve 3 notices, and I give them 10 days to, you know, pay up and go through the 3 notices. The last notice terminates the contract and allows me to repossess the beneficial interest, as opposed to foreclose, whether non-judicial or judicial, doesn't matter. I'm not foreclosing, I'm repossessing. So I think another analogy might be good for us here, Mitch, in that everybody probably that's listening to this call has purchased a vehicle and financed it at a bank. And when they do that, the bank keeps the title. You don't get the title, the bank holds the title until you make your very last payment. And if you finance that truck for 5 years and you make 4 years and 11 months worth of payments and default on the last payment, you don't get the title. They come and repossess your truck. And that's exactly what we do if a buyer defaults on the purchase of a beneficial interest in a land trust.
Okay, so but do all states look at trusts the same, or some states favor trusts and some states don't acknowledge trust at all, or how are trusts looked at throughout the country?
Well, that's a good question. There's no state that I'm aware of that's made the use of a land trust illegal. They are more prevalent in some states than others. Some states you'll find where they say, well, we don't do that around here. Yeah, it's legal, but nobody does it around here, or the title companies won't insure property going into a trust. You hear about that in places in Michigan and Wisconsin. So it's just kind of hit and miss as far as what title companies are familiar with it. The legal system is really kind of confusing, because the lawyers, when they go through law school, are not taught anything about trust law. So unless they learn something on their own after they get out of law school, they don't have a clue. And there are only 5% of the lawyers in the United States that are asset protection lawyers and would know and understand these trusts. So it's good news, bad news. I mean, the bad news is it's hard to find somebody to teach you how to do this. The good news is once you do find somebody like me to teach you how to do it, then you're operating in a level that 95% of lawyers in the country don't know anything about and don't understand. And I think any time you're doing business where a lawyer doesn't understand what you're doing, and as long as it's legal, then that's a good thing.
So if you're in one of these states that the foreclosure process is arduous, if you actually put the title into their name, you know, do a mortgage and a deed of trust or actually convey title and then just put a lien on the property. So if you're in one of those states that's difficult to undo that, how do you suggest you use a land trust to simplify the foreclosure process if you ever have to foreclose?
Well, first off, let's go back to the closing table that I mentioned earlier. We're signing a contract that clearly states they're buying beneficial interest. It also states they're going to pay me monthly payments, principal and interest, and taxes. And it also says that if they default, they're going to lose their interest in that trust. So everything is explained up front to them, and that contract says that it's non-recordable because I don't want a cloud on the title of my property. You know, if I'm selling somebody a $150,000 house and they're giving me $5,000 down, you know, they don't have the right to put a cloud on the title of my property for a lousy $5,000. So, you know, when you're selling property, you're being the financier, the bank. Then act like the bankers do. Don't they act like, you know, you come over here and kiss me and I might consider giving you a loan. You know, it's the same difference. You got the money, you set the rules, and you tell them how it's going to happen, or they don't get the house. And that's just the reality of it. I don't mean to be mean. I'm just saying, you know, if I'm loaning you money, and you need to borrow it, then I'm going to set the terms or I'm not going to loan it to you. And that's really what's going on here is I'm loaning you a heck of a lot of money with very little security, you know, maybe $5,000 up front. And on the softer side of that equation, Mitch, is, you know, I'm providing housing for people that would probably never, ever be able to buy a house in their whole life if I hadn't come up with this concept as a way to sell to them and protect me in the process. So I feel like I'm doing a service to society in providing seller financing, but I don't want to do it to my own detriment. I want to do it and be protected so it's, you know, a fair on both sides, so there's nobody taking advantage of anybody.
So if you're in one of these difficult states, you're suggesting you buy the property or your land trust buys the property, so the property's in trust, so it'd be like the 123 Main Street Land Trust. If you bought a house on 123 Main Street, you name it the 123 Main Street Land Trust. And so now you've got this trust, and you name your corporation most likely, or one of your LLCs, as the beneficiary. You could name yourself personally as a beneficiary, I suppose, but I don't think that's how you want to do it.
Right.
And then the beneficiary, you know, once you find someone who wants to move into that house as the owner and you agree on a down payment and the monthly payments and the taxes, the insurance, and the whole thing, and go through the RMLO or whatever you have to do, but you just explain to them basically what I was talking about. You know, I'm selling you this trust. This trust owns one asset. It's this house at 123 Main Street. If you own the trust, you control the asset, and if you want to take the asset out and put it in your own name later on, you can. But until you've paid me off in full, I'm going to sell you the beneficial interest of this trust on installments, and it's going to be so much per month for so many months.
Right,
and
right.
This is going to be the interest rate, whatever. You can even print out a real amortization schedule for
Yeah,
it.
I do. You know? I do, for their benefit and for mine. And
yeah, just like it was a car or a tractor or anything else.
Well, what's really interesting about this conversation, Mitch, is that from a legal standpoint, they're buying the beneficial interest in the trust. But from a tax standpoint, the IRS says, hey, we don't care about this trust. We look to the beneficiary. And if the buyer is a contract buyer, then he and she get the benefits of writing off the interest that's paid to me and the real estate taxes that's paid. So you really get the best of both worlds. You get the tax benefits as the buyer, and I get the protection as the seller. So it works really well.
A lot of people don't know that the tax write-offs for a person, they're saleable. You can sell your tax write-offs to someone else. Did you know that?
Yeah, you could. You can, yeah.
Well, I mean, So I guess what I'm saying is your tax write-offs are personal property, and they can be sold, and all you're saying is in this land document as to who's going to get them. And you can say the person who's buying the land trust can have them, can have the tax deductions. And,
right.
And you know, I'm not an attorney, neither is Randy, but I think if you'll verify what we're saying, you'll see that we're right on top of our game here. But always seek your own professional counsel, CPAs, attorneys, whatever the matter may be, because Randy and I can't be professionals in every state, and you know, that sea of minutia called real estate and real estate law is a gigantic ocean, and so you can't know everything about everything. And so always get your counsel. So let's say you have this land trust and someone stops paying you. What happens?
I send out those three notices. And if they don't pay up after the first, second, and third notice, then the contract's terminated, and they no longer have a right to purchase that beneficial interest. Now they are month-to-month tenants, and if they refuse to go, then I would evict them as tenants.
Okay. You send out three notices. You send out the three notices telling them they're about to lose their rights. They're about to violate their contract to buy the beneficial interest.
Right.
And so is there some document? Is there some document that has them in there as a lease if that contract for beneficial interest dies or goes away or they forfeit it by not making the payment? How are they in the house?
Yeah, I think that may be a state law issue we'd want to discuss with your local attorney as to how that goes. In Illinois, though, I do not have that in the contract because once they lose their rights under the contract, then they're just month-to-month tenants. They're in there without a lease, and it is legal to be in there on a month-to-month basis without a lease. Any leases longer than a year have to be in writing in Illinois, but I don't know about the other states. So I think that's just a state-by-state issue.
So are you saying that it's a natural effect that if you don't have a lease, you're on a month-to-month?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Understanding or whatever regiment you were paying. Like, if they paid you every 7 days in the history books, then you would have a week-to-week list.
Yeah, I think it depends on the state law, as to how they look at that. But the other thing I wanted to mention in reference to this whole concept here is one of the things I push really hard when I'm teaching students about the use of these trusts is to put each property into a separate trust. And you can see the benefit. Here's just one example of the benefit of having one property in one trust. Because if you do that, then you can sell the beneficial interest in one trust that's got one property in it. But if you do, like some people tell you, where you put 10 properties in one trust, then you can't do what we just talked about because you don't want to sell the beneficial interest in a trust that holds 10 properties when they're only buying one property. So it doesn't cost anything to form a land trust. Nothing. There's no registration fees, no franchise taxes, nothing. So it behooves you to learn how to create these trusts because you can just spit them out on your computer and put every property into its own trust. It doesn't cost you anything because if you're going to hire somebody to do this for you, they're going to charge you $1,000 per trust, and that's going to eat into your bottom line pretty fast.
I've been doing land trust since 1997. I've put every property I ever had in a land trust.
And never paid for it.
All it is, just a template.
Yeah.
Move around. You just fill in the blanks. Who's the beneficiary? Who's the trustee? What's the property address? What's the legal description? You know, you just fill in the specific information for that specific deal. You know, so I think if you sell the beneficial interest of the trust on someone, there's all kinds of arguments. Now, some people try to use this to get around Dodd-Frank saying, you know, I'm not selling a house. I'm selling the beneficial interest of the trust. You know, I'm going to do it 50 times this year. And when really, I think you walk a fine line. I personally still conform to Dodd-Frank and all those rules. If someone's buying a house from me and they're going to move into it, whether I'm selling the beneficial interest or not, I still give them all the benefits of Dodd-Frank just because I don't want to be the one that they make the case study out of on whether it flies or not. Nobody knows if selling the beneficial interest of a trust would stand up in court. If you were a house flipper and you did this, you bought 50 houses in 1 year and you put each one of them in the individual trust, you sold the beneficial interest trust on each one, and every one of them had a buyer who was living in the house. I don't want to be the one to to have to go to the Supreme Court to get the ruling. You know what I mean? Once
I
they
sure
have
do.
A ruling, I decide if I'm going to change the way I'm doing it. So for right now, just for the record, for right or wrong or better or worse, I'm doing this so that I'm putting the property in land trust. I live in Texas, so I have a really easy foreclosure state, so I don't have to. But when I've had other difficult things and been in difficult places, I've sold the beneficial interest of the trust in installments. And then when they didn't pay me, it was a simple eviction, and it was not a foreclosure. Because, see, the foreclosure process is to get the title out of one entity's name and to another entity's name. That's what the process of foreclosure is trying to do. It's trying to change the name on the title that's filed at the courthouse. If the title of the property is in the name of the land trust and you're selling the beneficial interest, your beneficial interest of the land trust on installments, then everything has stayed in your name until the final installment payment is made. And then you owe them that trust with that asset in it. You know, no more,
right.
No less.
Right.
And so, but if they stop paying on it, I don't have to move a title from one entity's name to another entity's name because it never left the original land trust entity with me or my company as the beneficiary. So that's the magic of the land trust as it pertains to trying to help you find an easier way to take possession in a state where it might not be so simple any
yeah.
other way.
Yeah. Yes.
Did I get through that?
Right.
Did I get through that all right?
Yes, I think we've cleared that up, and Dodd-Frank is something we're all still struggling with, but I agree with you. You know, if you have any qualms about what you're doing, just, you know, get that loan officer to get them qualified, and then you got that paperwork in there, so you don't have to worry about compliance.
Yeah, right now that's the path I'm taking. It's just comply with Dodd-Frank. Don't try to go under or over or around it. Just do it. And then maybe by the next election process, some of this stuff will calm down or go away or whatever. Who knows? But
right
now, this is what how we have to look at it. So, Randy, tell me, you know, you and I we've put a course together where you get my online 25-hour course and get your land trust, everything you know about land trust, basically. And we were doing it all for $9.97, right?
Right.
Right? And I know for a fact, I mean, I know what my course has been, you can't find it anywhere on the internet for less than $1,497. Let's call it $1,500. You can search all over the internet all you want to. I sell that thing at $1,500 almost every day. So, and then Randy, what is your course normally? Your land trust?
Well, my basic course is $525, and then it comes with a membership in my land trust university, which is, for the basic course, is $797. So $797 and $525 is $1,322, and yours was 14 something. So we're looking at $1,800, $1,900, $2,800, $2,900 worth of product here for $997. So it's a killer
yeah.
deal. Sure.
Yeah. So if you guys are interested in getting on board with Randy Hughes, Mr. Land Trust, and Mitch Stephen, the art of owner financing, that's what I like to do. Then now's a great chance to pick it up for $997. I don't know how long this lasts, or I don't have any idea how long it lasts because I'm kind of out here on a limb without my back office help right now, but it'll be a great bargain for you if you've been thinking about it. If you've already bought my course or you've already bought Randy's course and you just need the other course, then just give us a holler at support@1000houses.com. That's support@1000houses.com and we'll get it all figured out and get you
yep.
the half that you need and adjust the price appropriately.
Right.
And, right?
Right.
And then, you know, I've got some real high respect for your program, Randy, because, you know, when people buy your program, they're able to call you, any time for the first year and talk to you directly, right?
That's right. I actually answer my phone, and they can always go to my website. You know, if it's after hours, I've got a discussion forum where they can post a question, and I'll answer it the next morning. I'm very accessible. I'm here to help you, hold your hand at least through that first trust, and after that, it's like riding a bike. You'll wonder why you weren't doing it 10 years ago because it's really
yeah, it's not that difficult. And once you do it once, it's like, oh, okay, well, what was I so worried about?
Yeah, right,
because
right,
I remember when we made the decision to go in my office to switch over to buy everything in land trust, And boy, my office people were really not happy with me, you know, because it was a change. Mm-hmm. And then we did it one time, and everyone in the office just said, that's all there is to it? Yeah, and you guys have been like making my life miserable for the last 2 days knowing this meeting was coming here.
Yeah.
And it's nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah. No, it's not hard at all. Not hard at all. And I just, the older I get, the more benefits I find to using these trusts. It's just amazing. We've just been talking today about one of 50 reasons to use a land trust, 50 different techniques, and you just become amazed at the flexibility and the way that allows you to maneuver with nobody knowing what you're doing, because nothing's recorded in the courthouse in your name. It's all in the name of your trusts and your trustees. It's a real nice feeling, you know, go sleep at night and not worry about someone looking up what you own and figuring out what your net worth is and maybe, you know, flipping and falling on one of your properties to initiate a lawsuit and just plain to be more private. I think real estate investors especially need to be more private in what they do, because our society is getting more and more a sue to make money instead of work hard to make money type of mentality.
Yeah, it's getting to be quite a litigious, you know, we're still not so bad in Texas and some of the South down here, but it's getting bad in some parts of the country. Everything's getting very litigious. So go to 1000houses.com/land trust. 1000houses.com/land trust. Let's make that /land trust combo. C-O-M-B-O.
Okay. It's quite a deal. Quite a killer deal price. So.
Okay. Ben, I appreciate your time. I know there's a lot more to talk about land trust. I mean, it has estate planning reasons. It supersedes probate if you're smart enough to name successor beneficiaries. I mean, it's got anonymity reasons. There's a ton of reasons to use a land trust. All right, my friend. Well, I appreciate the time, and we could probably talk about this for quite a few days in a row. So a little later on this year, we're going to do just that, huh? For a couple of days?
Yep, I think we will. Probably in the wonderful city of Las Vegas. So everybody can look forward to that.
Probably September, October-ish or something like that?
Yep. We'll put a notice out to all the database and let everybody know. But kind of pencil in September or October for a 2-day, maybe a 3-day event in Las Vegas. So we'll have a lot of fun and learn how to make some money in this business.
All right, Randy. I appreciate you very much. I will talk to you soon, and thank you for being on the call.
Okay, thanks, Mitch. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.